Hello and welcome to your GCSE Psychology Revision podcast. Today we're tackling one of the most important topics in the entire specification, scientific processes. Once you understand this material, it unlocks everything else in psychology. Examiners love this topic. It comes up in almost every paper. So grab a pen, get comfortable, and let's get into it. Let's start with the difference between an aim and a hypothesis, a classic one or two mark question that many candidates muddle up. An aim is a general statement of what the researcher intends to investigate. For example, to investigate whether sleep deprivation affects memory. It's broad. It tells us the topic but doesn't make a specific prediction. A hypothesis is a precise, testable statement of what the researcher expects to find. The key word is testable. Examiners are looking for that. Hypotheses come in two flavours. Directional hypotheses, also called one-tailed, predict the direction of the result. For example, participants who sleep for fewer than 5 hours will recall significantly fewer words than participants who sleep for 8 hours. That tells us which group will do better. That's directional. Non-directional hypotheses, also called two-tailed, predict that there will be a difference but don't specify which way. For example, there will be a significant difference in the number of words recalled between the two groups. No direction, just a difference. Memory hook, D for directional, D for direction. If you know which way it goes, it's directional. Now let's talk about sampling. You need to know all five methods inside out. The target population is the entire group the researcher wants to study. The sample is the smaller group actually selected. The goal is always for the sample to be representative, reflecting the characteristics of the target population. If it doesn't, we have a biased sample, which limits how far we can generalise our findings. Random sampling means every member of the target population has an equal chance of being selected, using a random number generator or drawing names from a hat. Unbiased, but time-consuming and impractical with large populations. Systematic sampling means selecting every nth person from a list. If you have 200 people and want 20 participants, you'd select every 10th person. More practical than random, but can still be biased if the list has a pattern. Stratified sampling is arguably the most representative method. You divide the population into subgroups, called strata, based on characteristics like age or gender, then select participants from each subgroup in proportion to how they appear in the population. If your target population is 60% female, 60% of your sample should be female too. Brilliant for representativeness, but time-consuming to set up. Opportunity sampling is the most commonly used in practice. You simply ask whoever is available and willing to take part. Quick and easy, but highly biased. Your sample is limited to whoever happens to be around at the time. Volunteer sampling, also called self-selected sampling, means participants respond to an advertisement to take part. Participants are motivated and willing, but volunteers tend to share certain characteristics, like being more conscientious or having more free time, which introduces bias. Right, let's move on to experimental design. There are three main designs for allocating participants to conditions. Independent groups design means different participants take part in each condition. No order effects, but participant variables can affect results, and you need more participants. Repeated measures design means the same participants take part in all conditions. This controls for participant variables beautifully. You're comparing each person against themselves. However, it introduces order effects. The solution is counterbalancing. Half the participants do condition A first, then B. The other half do B first, then A. Matched pairs design is a compromise. Different participants take part in each condition, but they're matched on key variables like age or IQ. This reduces participant variables without order effects, but it's very time-consuming to match participants. Memory hook for the three designs, IRM. Independent, repeated, matched. Think I run marathons.
Now, variables, one of the most common areas where candidates lose marks, so pay close attention. The independent variable, or IV, is what the researcher deliberately changes or manipulates. The dependent variable, or DV, is what is measured, the outcome. The DV depends on the IV. Operationalization means defining your variables in a way that can actually be measured. So instead of saying stress, you'd operationalize it as score on the perceived stress scale. Instead of memory, you'd say number of words correctly recalled from a list of 20. Examiners love operationalization. If a question asks you to design a study, always operationalize your variables. Extraneous variables are any variables other than the IV that could potentially affect the DV. If they're controlled, they're just extraneous. If they're not controlled and they actually do affect the DV, they become confounding variables. That's the key distinction. Confounding variables have actually interfered with your results. To control extraneous variables, researchers use standardization, giving all participants the same instructions, environment, and materials. They also use random allocation, randomly assigning participants to conditions so individual differences are spread evenly. Now let's talk about ethics. The British Psychological Society, the BPS, publishes a code of ethics that all psychologists must follow. Informed consent means participants must be told what the study involves before they agree to take part, and must give consent freely, without pressure. The right to withdraw means participants can leave the study at any time without penalty, and can even ask for their data to be removed afterwards. Confidentiality means participants' personal data must be kept private. Researchers typically use anonymity to protect this. Protection from harm means researchers must ensure participants are not exposed to greater risk than they would encounter in everyday life, including physical harm, psychological distress, and embarrassment. Deception means researchers should not mislead participants about the true nature of the study. Some deception is permitted if the research could not be conducted otherwise, but participants must always be debriefed afterwards. Debriefing means at the end of the study, participants are told the true aims of the research, given the opportunity to ask questions, and reassured if they experienced any distress. Let's tackle reliability and validity, two concepts that candidates frequently confuse. Reliability refers to consistency. A reliable measure gives the same result every time under the same conditions. Test-retest reliability means you administer the same test to the same participants on two separate occasions and check whether the scores correlate. Inter-observer reliability means two or more observers independently record the same behaviour and you check whether their recordings agree. Validity refers to whether a study actually measures what it claims to measure. Face validity is the most basic. Does the measure look like it's measuring what it should? Concurrent validity means comparing your measure against an established measure of the same thing. Ecological validity refers to how well findings generalize to real-world settings. Lab experiments often have low ecological validity because the artificial setting affects behavior. Temporal validity refers to whether findings hold true over time. Here's the key distinction. Reliability is about consistency. Validity is about accuracy. You can have a reliable measure that is not valid, like a broken scale that always shows the same wrong weight. Now, the features of science. Psychology aims to be a science, and there are several key features you need to know. Objectivity means researchers should not let personal opinions or biases influence their findings. The empirical method means knowledge is gained through direct observation and experience, rather than through opinion or authority. Replicability means a study can be repeated by other researchers and produce the same results, crucial for establishing that findings are reliable and not just a fluke. Falsifiability, from philosopher Karl Popper, means a scientific theory must be capable of being proven wrong. If a theory can explain every possible outcome, it's not scientific. Theory construction works like this. Researchers collect data, form hypotheses, test them, and if the evidence supports the hypothesis, it contributes to building a theory. A paradigm is a shared set of assumptions and methods within a scientific community.
Let's cover the structure of a scientific report. The acronym AIM-IRD will help you. Abstract, introduction, method, results, discussion. The abstract is a brief summary of the entire study. Aims, method, results, and conclusions. The introduction reviews existing research and theory, explains why the study is needed, and ends with the hypothesis. The method section describes exactly how the study was conducted. Participants, design, materials, and procedure, in enough detail that another researcher could replicate it. The results section presents the data using descriptive statistics like means and graphs, without interpretation. The discussion interprets the results, relates them back to the hypothesis and existing research, considers limitations, and suggests future research directions. References list all sources cited in the report in a standardised format. Right, exam tips and common mistakes. This is where you can really pick up marks. Always link your answer to the scenario. If the question gives you a study about memory, don't just define independent variable in the abstract. Say, in this study, the independent variable would be the type of music played, classical or silence. When asked to write a hypothesis, always make it testable and operationalised. Don't write music affects memory, write participants who listen to classical music will recall significantly more words from a 20-word list than participants who revise in silence. Don't confuse extraneous and confounding variables. Extraneous variables are potential threats that have been controlled. Confounding variables have actually affected your results. When evaluating sampling methods, always address both a strength and a limitation. Examiners want balance. For ethics questions, don't just list principles. Explain how they apply to the specific study in the question. Right, quickfire recall quiz. Cover your notes and answer these. Question 1. What is the difference between a directional and a non-directional hypothesis? Question 2. Name the 5 sampling methods. Question 3. What is the difference between extraneous and confounding variables? Question 4. What does AIRD stand for? Question 5. What is the difference between reliability and validity? How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back and reread that section of your notes. Retrieval practice, testing yourself, is one of the most powerful revision techniques there is. Let's wrap up. Scientific processes underpin all of psychology. The research process moves from aim to hypothesis to study design to data collection to analysis to writing up. Hypotheses can be directional or non-directional. There are 5 sampling methods: random, systematic, stratified, opportunity, and volunteer. The 3 experimental designs are independent groups, repeated measures, and matched pairs. Variables must be operationalized. Ethics are governed by the BPS code. Reliability is about consistency. Validity is about accuracy. And psychology aims to be scientific through objectivity, empiricism, replicability, and falsifiability. You've got this. Keep revising, keep testing yourself, and remember, every mark counts. Good luck.